Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior programs are also available there under Public Affairs. Today is August 3rd, 2022. The markets were up today with Dow closing at 32,812, the NASDAQ at 12,668, and the S&P at 4,155. That's all good signs moving up. Tonight, I am talking about tax changes for 2022 and some proposed changes to be aware of. I normally don't like to talk about proposed tax changes. I usually wait until they become law, but I just thought maybe it would be important to kind of have this on our radar to watch out for. We are live tonight. If you have questions, we will take those. Siri's in the studio with us this evening, and we'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. 8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Siri. He'll write it down and he'll bring it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer them. Questions can also be submitted through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, tonight talking about some 2022 tax changes and proposed changes. And for the most part, we might think that the 2022 changes just relate to, you know, kind of inflation adjustments. And of course, we do have that every year. I just told someone today in a meeting that I used to be able to know all these numbers years ago, and I can't keep track of them anymore because they're just constantly changing and they're not, you know, always even numbers. So when you start saying something changes by, you know, $285, I just can't keep that to memory. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of those. And then just a little bit about some proposed changes, some, you know, conversations we've heard coming out of the IRS about, you know, beneficiary IRA rules, and then maybe highlight a little bit the sunset of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, how that's going to go back to those rules in 2026, of course, unless there's some other types of legislation that is implemented. And we might have thought that there would be tax changes years ago. They didn't go through. They were temporary. Can't be more than 10 years. And, you know, we're getting closer and closer to 2026, that such that legislators could not do anything, and we will have tax law change in 2026. It's just reverting. So let's kind of talk about some of those inflation adjustment changes, but it's not just that, because what happened in 2022 is we actually had, you know, stimulus measures that were put in place to help folks with their, you know, cash flow through things like recovery rebate credits and the economic stimulus payments and other types of credits that were given, and those are gone. So when we talk about changes for 2022, it is some, yes, inflation adjustments. And I think it's worth mentioning those, even though we expect those every year. It's worth mentioning them just to remind people of some of the benefits that are available to people that you sometimes forget about. So first looking, I looked this up in an article. Kiplinger had an article called Kiplinger Tax Changes and Key Amounts for the 2022 Tax Year. And it was an article by Rocky Mengel and Joy Taylor from July 19th of 2022. Because I will say, when I was trying to look for like proposed changes, it was almost overwhelming to kind of see what's going on with there. So let's just go with the ones we know about for sure. So, for example, there is a child credit that was increased for 2021 for people who had children who were eligible for the child credit. They even provided an advanced credit. So many, many people got payments for half the year in advance of the child credit that normally you would only get through filing your tax return. And they increased that for children based on ages. I think if it was under three and then three to, you know, some other age, and it was up to like $3,000 or $3,600. That is back to $2,000 per child under age 17. And in fact, I think they even increased, they covered children age 17 in 2021 as well, is my recollection. So the child credit is back to $2,000 a child for children under age 17. And of course, there are income limitations on that as well. The child and dependent care credit is back to being non-refundable, and the maximum credit is back to 35% of $3,000 for a single dependent or $6,000 for multiple dependents. So the child and dependent care is when you have child care that you're paying for out of pocket. And depending on your income, there's different phase outs and different amounts of credit that you can get. But the maximum credit was 35% of that $3,000 or $6,000. Higher income, it's lower. You know, it could be 20, you know, down to 20% or something like that. But this is in excess of people who might use a flexible spending account for dependent care. So first, you know, you would use your flexible spending money for your dependent care. You want to make sure you do that, because if at open enrollment time you said, I have a child and I want to set aside money for dependent care, the max was $5,000, then you could use that. But if you really spent $6,000, then you could get that dependent care credit on that difference. Prior to 2021, that wasn't a refundable credit. In 2021, they made it refundable, but again, it's no longer going to be refundable. It's non-refundable, and it's not as large of a credit. Okay, so then the earned income, and you have the reason you have to be aware of this is because sometimes people plan their withholdings from their wages according to what they think they're, you know, bottom line tax due might be for, in April when you file your taxes. And if in 2021 you got that greater credit and maybe you even got a refund, you might have said, hey, then I'm over withholding. Let me adjust my withholding. And if you did do something like that and adjusted it, now they're not withholding as much. But in 2022, you don't get as much of the credit or it's not refundable, then you could end up owing. So that's why we talk about this and have you aware of it, so that if you did make any adjustments to your withholding using your W-4 with your employer, that you want to review that and maybe adjust it back, because the credits just are not as large in 2022 as we saw in 2021, and we don't want any surprises for people when it comes to tax filing. We're at our first break, and when we come back from this, we will continue our discussion on 2022 tax changes, what to be aware of, and then some proposed changes that we're watching. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, give your question to Siri. He'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer. Again, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available on the WDIY app and online at WDIY.org. Tonight, we are talking about 2022 tax changes, for the most part, inflation adjustments, but then just some particular items that I want to make sure I bring to people's attention, which is revolving around credits, tax credits for the most part. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Siri. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. So we were talking about the child credit going back to $2,000. The child independent care credit is no longer refundable. It's now non-refundable, and the max credit is back to the 35% on $3,000 for a single child or $6,000 for multiple dependents. And for those people who have their children in child care, we know that the child care costs really quite often exceed that quite a bit. I have had people spend $10,000, $12,000 for child care, but those amounts of care that qualify for the credit are capped at that $3,000 for single and $6,000 for multiple. The earned income credit. Now, the earned income credit is, you know, really, you have to have fairly low income to qualify for that credit. Phase outs do apply. Eligible ages have reverted, and the maximum credit is reduced back to the pre-2021 levels. So just be aware of that. Recovery rebates and stimulus payments, economic stimulus payments, those are done. I don't anticipate that we would see those, you know, coming back, or that we would have to reinstitute those. So recovery rebates. The reason I want to mention that also is, again, when we go back and look at our 2021 tax return, if you were someone who didn't get the economic stimulus payments, you know, maybe on the first round or the second and third round, which was affected 2021, if you weren't eligible for them, you know, based on your prior year income, but then you qualified for them on your 2021 return, you might have had, you know, more of a refund then, because the recovery rebate, you could calculate it and qualify for it on your 2021 return if you hadn't received it prior. Again, if then that puts you in a situation where you had a refund and you might have adjusted your withholdings or you're not paying in as much tax, you're not going to have that this year. So just be aware of that. Tax brackets were also expanded for inflation, and I'm not even going to go into the detail because I'll put everybody to sleep, and some of you might be driving your car, and I don't want to do that. So tax brackets were expanded for inflation. It helps a little bit, and not so significantly that it's probably that material for most people, but the tax brackets were expanded for inflation. Now, John called in off air from Bethlehem, and John had a question about college 529s. What to do in the year prior to a child going to college? What should parents be doing or not doing? Well, John, some of this all depends on whether or not you think your child qualifies for financial aid, and if the 529s are held by you as a parent or by the grandparent or by, you know, the child themselves, because there is something called a UTMA 529, which is Uniform Transfer to Minors Act provision for kids who might have had their own money, their own custodial money that they put into a 529. So when we talk about what to do in the year prior to a child going to college, I probably would take a longer lens on that and look a little bit, you know, even maybe a few years before. The only reason I mention that is you kind of want to watch with these 529s. If you started investing when the kids were, you know, tiny babies, and now we're talking fast forward 18 years, the investment allocation that you might have used when they were tiny tots might have been more aggressive because you had a longer runway for that investment allocation, and you might have been more aggressive. Then as the children get closer to needing the funds to pay for their qualified education expenses, which is tuition and room and board and, you know, equipment and books and things like that, as you get closer to that and you're going to have to draw funds from the 529, you don't want to have to be drawing from maybe what would have been an aggressive allocation if you never changed it. When the market's down. So we've seen a lot of volatility recently. And if someone had not reviewed their investment allocation on their 529 until the last minute, you may end up having to pull funds from the 529 when the market's down. So you ask the question, what should you be doing or not be doing a year prior to the child going to college? I would pose that you might want to start reviewing a few years before they go to college for the investment allocation that you have. And you can do that now. So if your child isn't going to school for another year, you might be able to, and I don't know what you have, this is just general education, but you might be able to say, gosh, is now the time to rebalance or reallocate it to something a little bit less aggressive, if that's the situation, when we see the markets have taken this little turn, and is it going to come back? Are we going to see better performance? You might want to look and make sure that you at least have enough money to kind of cover maybe the first semester of tuition. You don't always have to pull it all out. So look at the underlying investment allocation you have on the 529 and see if it's appropriate for having to draw on it in possibly a year, and then a second year, a third year, a fourth year. So generally we would, you know, for money that someone has to tap in the very short term, we probably wouldn't be as aggressive with that. So that's one thing you're going to do prior to them going to college. You're going to review the investment allocation. The other review that you're going to want to do is, where is the 529 funds coming from? Who owns the plan? So review that. If the parents own the plan and your student might be eligible for financial aid, if the parents own it, then there's a certain expected contribution from the family from that 529. If a grandparent owns the 529, that's a whole different accountability for that. So you might hear and have read articles where they say the grandparents don't take money out of the 529. It's going to throw your child out of qualifying for financial aid. Well, number one, your child might not qualify for financial aid anyway, because if financial aid is based on your income, the parents' income, and the parents' assets, excluding the home and excluding retirement accounts, if you're making $200,000 and have $100,000 in the bank, it might not be likely that you would qualify for financial aid anyway. I don't know all those calculations anymore, but you might not qualify. Typically, why people might file for financial aid, even though they might not receive financial aid, would be to get access to the Parent Plus loans and things like that. So every child, even if they don't have a financial need, can qualify for some form of student loan. We had our oldest daughter do that as well, and our son. So the financial aid, when you go to file for the financial aid, and you have to put in all that information. If a grandparent takes money out of a 529 to give to the grandchild, that is called, I like to call it a resource, not income, because people get confused. They say, oh, it's considered income for the grandchild. It's not really income. It's considered a resource for the grandchild. And that has a higher contribution factor than the parents' money does. So that's why they often say don't take money out of a grandparent's 529 for that beneficiary student until maybe the third year, when you've already completed the financial aid forms for that child, because you're kind of filing for financial aid like 2 years before you actually get it. So just be careful about that. So I hope that was a very long-winded answer, John, but I really appreciate you calling in. It was a good question, and this tells me it's probably time to do another show on 529. So I'll try to fit that topic in maybe in September. So thank you. Folks, we are at our second break. If you have questions, like John, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is Rick Weaver, host of Celtic Fair here on WDIY. Membership helps ensure your favorite programs stay on the air. Shane from Bethlehem recently renewed his membership and said, "Celtic Fair is a great music program. Keep it up." Thanks for the words of support, Shane. We appreciate it. Join Shane and become a WDIY member today. Visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 4.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Laurie Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We're talking about tax changes for 2022 and some proposed changes, as well as taking listeners' calls at 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Siri. He'll write it down and bring it in. I just have a couple little follow-up items for John in Bethlehem. John, I just quickly looked this up. If the parent owns the 529, any parental assets beyond that, beyond $10,000, which falls under the asset protection allowance, will reduce the student's aid package by up to a maximum of 5.64% of the asset's value. So it sounds like, you know, there's some strange calculations in there. So it doesn't have as big of an effect on the financial aid, a parent owning it, as it would if the grandparent owned it and took a distribution out. So be aware of that. The other thing I like to remind people about, and I hope, John, you're still listening, because depending on where the parent's income is, whoever has the dependent student may be eligible for an education credit called an American Opportunity Tax Credit, and that is a huge tax credit. So if you qualify in the 2021 numbers, let me see if I have that handy. The American Opportunity Tax Credit for married filing joint taxpayers making under $160,000 could qualify for the full credit if they had out-of-pocket expenses of $4,000. So if you have out-of-pocket expenses like tuition, $4,000, you can qualify for a $2,500 credit. So what happens is there's a number of education credits that we have, and those education credits, we can't double dip on them, but we can coordinate them. So I will often have folks who are eligible or would be eligible for the American Opportunity Credit do $4,000 out of pocket, save the get the $2,500 education credit. That means they're only, you know, $1,500 out of pocket net, so to speak. And it's like $2,500 of free money. It's really encouraging education and expenditures toward education. So I really like that. And then that is tuition. And then we'll use the 529 for the balance of the tuition and for like room and board, the books, the computer, that type of thing. So there's a coordination of benefits for education. And, you know, if you're eligible for the American Opportunity Credit, I love that one. That's $4,000 out of pocket to save $2,500 if you're married filing joint making less than $160,000 or single making under, oh, what's that, $80,000. Then there's a phase out range. And let's see what else I wanted to say about that. So a nice education. You have to fulfill all the other requirements, like it has to be a four-year degree undergrad. You can't get it more than 4 years. If you are already beyond the 4 years and still going to school, there's another education credit called a lifetime learning credit. They used to adjust that for inflation, and after 2021, they're not adjusting the lifetime learning credit anymore for inflation, but it's still a nice credit as well. We had another caller, Ed, from Bethlehem, and he said, with projected changes to the tax code, will the value of charitable donations be increased as they were in years past? Thank you, Ed, for this question. And that is one of the things I was going to mention as far as the tax changes for 2022. What we saw for 2020 and 2021 is they were giving us an above the line charitable deduction of $300 for single and I think $600 for married filing joint if you each did it. They're not going to do that above the line deduction in 2022 that we're aware of. You know, they can always change things. But if and I haven't seen anything in any of the proposed changes for allowing charitable deductions beyond what we are used to seeing. I think it's just going to go back to if you itemize deductions and you're over the standard deduction, you know, with your tax deduction capped at $10,000 if you have mortgage interest, and then, of course, the charitable deductions. They did make some other changes for 2022, but it's not allowing more of a charitable deduction than what we had before. In fact, it's limiting it from what we had in 2021. So I don't see any of the proposed changes impacting that at this point. Now, remember, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is set to sunset in 2026, where the standard deduction is going to go back down significantly. Exemptions would be allowed again. And the deduction on Schedule A, where most people would itemize and where the biggest deduction quite often was this, the tax deduction for real estate taxes and state and local taxes. That's the reason a lot of people itemize. They had the state and local income tax deduction from, you know, their wages, and they had the real estate taxes from their home. They had mortgage interest and they had charitable deductions. So quite often people were over that standard deduction and could itemize. Once they raised the standard deduction to the level that they did and capped the tax deduction, so many people stopped itemizing. So many people. So then what happened is people weren't always maybe as charitably inclined as they had been in the past. Some organizations were quite concerned that they weren't going to have the same funding that they did in the past because people weren't going to be benefiting from it. For the most part, I would say philanthropists and charitably inclined people continue to do their charitable intent. What happened, we had to get more clever about how do we get charitable deductions for people that were no longer getting them, but that were charitably inclined. And so what we were doing is talking to folks who had the ability and the means was to bunch their charitable contributions into like 1 year. So instead of doing $10,000 to the church for 5 years, that would have been, you know, a $50,000 deduction in the old days over that 5 year period. And now we're not getting any benefit because we're not getting over the standard deduction amount. Instead, we said, let's do the $50,000 all at once, but not to the church maybe, but to a donor advised fund. And then they could get the deduction because with that big, big bunched up charitable contribution, they were getting over the standard deduction amount. So we were having to get more clever that way. And then they would make the charitable contribution through, it's called a grant, through the donor advised fund. They don't get another deduction for it, but they could invest the money and it could make a little bit more. And then grants are made out of the donor advised fund. The other thing to really drive home awareness about, which exists and has always existed for some time now, is the qualified charitable distribution from IRAs. So for people who are 70 and a half or older, you can make a charitable contribution from your IRA and not pay income tax on it. So if you have a required minimum distribution of $25,000 and you normally make a charitable contribution to your church of $10,000, rather than take your $25,000 from your IRA, pay tax on it, put it in the bank. Let's say you pay $5,000 of tax on your $25,000. You put $20,000 in the bank. Then you write a check to the charity for $10,000. Rather than do that, give the $10,000 out of your IRA directly. It's called a qualified charitable distribution. The check is made to the charity. It avoids income tax on it, lowers your page one income. It might even lower your Social Security taxable income. It could open you up to tax favored rates on some of your other, you know, qualified dividends and capital gains. So we had to get, you know, smarter about how we were doing charitable giving. So, Ed, thank you for your question. I don't see any protected. What I will add when we come back from the break are the charitable impact we had in 2021 and 2020 that we no longer have, some other limitations. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back, folks. We are talking about 2022 tax changes and some proposed changes as we go through the show. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to Siri. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. So to tag on to Ed's questions about proposed changes to the tax code, and I had mentioned, you know, not that I had seen, but I did want to point out that in 2020 and 2021, what was given to us was they removed the limitation on cash contributions to charity. And many people don't even know about this because nobody gives away this much money. And that is if, for example, years and years ago, if I made $100,000 on page one, and I decided to give $100,000 away to charity, the IRS limited my deduction to 50% of page one. Then several years ago, they changed it to a 60% limitation. So in my story, if I made $100,000 and I wanted to give away $100,000, I was capped at $60,000. Whatever I didn't get a current deduction for carries forward for 5 years. I can carry it forward and use it in future years. Well, what we know is in recent years with this high, huge, high standard deduction, that carry forward may not even come to fruition because we're not itemizing. We might not even be using it. But in 2020 and 2021, with the economy and nonprofits having to really step up and, you know, help take care of our poor and our hungry and our educated, they removed that limitation and said someone could give 100% cash to a charity and they're going to let you no cap on the income. So if I made $100,000 and I wanted to donate $100,000 cash, they would let me have that full deduction. All right. So that was that limitation. There's other limitations. So it's back to 60%. That's gone. And I did have one client use that limitation. So it does happen. It's just not that often. But remember how I told you some people will bunch deductions into 1 year. The other kind of savings that we would look at for charitable giving, since we were on that subject a bit, is that there's cash donations and then there's donations of appreciated investments. So another tax advantage way to give to a nonprofit, even if you can't itemize deductions, I already mentioned the qualified charitable distribution for people 70 and a half or older. That's like, love that. So the RMD age has changed to 72, but you can still do a qualified charitable distribution at 70 and a half. So I love that because that's ordinary income. It takes it right off page one. But for people who aren't our required minimum distribution age or age 70 and a half and are charitably inclined, maybe you're not going to benefit from itemizing. So what other tax benefit might you get by being charitably inclined? If you donate appreciated securities that you've held long-term more than a year, you could make a donation of that appreciated security to your favorite nonprofit, charitable organization, 501c3, and then you don't have to report the gain on the investment because you've transferred it to the charity. They sell it they don't pay taxes on gains. So in that way, you've had tax savings by not having to recognize the gain for federal or state purposes. And, you know, for those people who bunch deductions, who might not have the, the qualified charitable distribution option, we could bunch deductions by using appreciated securities. So we could have someone who might want to make, 5 years, $10,000 a year, $50,000, and we use some appreciated securities and get the itemized deduction to the extent it exceeds the standard deduction, plus not have to pay the income tax on the capital gains for federal or state if it was long term. Okay, so be aware of some of these changes for 2022. It's back to the 60% limitation. Now, you heard me mention stock, but that has a different limitation. So if you donate appreciated stock, there is a limitation of that donation being allowed to 30% of your page one income. So you there's some things we just don't know. We don't know. So you just have to be aware of that. Other changes for 2022, the required minimum distribution life expectancy tables were updated to provide for longer life expectancies. So that lowers the required minimum distribution just a little bit, not really substantial, but some people might have, set it up, or they want to take the minimum amount and they set it up based on their life expectancy table from like 5 years ago, and you're a do-it-yourselfer, you might not realize you can adjust it. So you can go on the IRS's website, irs.gov, and just Google, life expectancy tables. They'll pop up and you'll see the new life expectancy factors to use for people turning, 72, where they have required minimum distributions. Educators deduction, that was raised from $250 to $300. That had been $250 forever. And so it's nice that our poor educators who spend so much of their own money on bringing resources into their classroom. For my son's girlfriend does it all the time, buying things, games and materials for the students. They get a page one deduction of $300. Doesn't amount to much at all, but it is something. So they did raise that to $300. Flexible spending, I'm not going to mention that. Retirement accounts, the retirement account contributions did go up. There is an extra $1,000 that you can put into a 401k plan for 2022. So that's one of the changes. The reason I'd like to mention that is that people sometimes will set up their 401k contribution when they first get employed, and they might say 3% of my pay. And maybe the employer does a match. If I put in 3%, they put in 3%. Or maybe if I put in 6%, they put in 6%. So you want to make sure you get that match. But they might set it and not realize over time they're making more money, they might have more cash flow, and rather than spending it on, discretionary things, you could be putting more into your retirement account. Know that those amounts do get adjusted for inflation regularly, and the amount that an individual can put into their 401k or their 403b is $20,500. And if you're over 50, you can do another $2,600. So someone can put in up to $27,000 if they're over 50 or over into a retirement plan. And that defers the taxes on that today for federal purposes. For states like Pennsylvania, they don't allow the deferral, and that's because they don't tax your retirement account when you take it out. But be aware of that. The other thing to be aware of is that same limitation applies to what we call a designated Roth. More and more employers are allowing their employees to allocate their retirement savings into what we call a Roth feature. Remember, regular listeners know how much I like Roths. Roths are a way to grow your retirement money's income tax-free. So what happens is you're not getting a tax deduction for that for federal purposes. The Roth isn't giving you a tax deduction today, but those savings and that growth on that Roth portion is going to grow income tax free for you. If you retire or you change jobs, you could roll that over into a Roth and retain that tax free characteristics on that. The issue is that you're always usually going to have some taxable portion of a 401k, because the employer, if they're putting something in a match for you, their portion will always be, you know, taxable, and then it has to get tracked, and any growth and earnings on that piece is taxable. If you made some pre-tax contributions in the past, that grows and will be taxable to you. So the Roth is very specific. It does get tracked by the the third-party administrator for the plan, the administrator for the 401k or 403b. Just know that that Roth feature often is available now more than it used to be. For years, when it was available, I didn't see a lot of employers weren't implementing it or adopting it into their 401k plan. So be aware of that. What we sometimes see is when you're younger and you're in a lower income tax bracket, the Roth feature could be really powerful for you to get that money growing income tax, or, you know, income tax free. But then as you become more advanced in your career, more experience, getting promotions, making more money, now you might need the tax deduction. Maybe you do it a half and half. So it is particular to your own situation, but don't forget that those amounts have increased quite a bit. So for example, if someone, you know, might have been putting money in the 401k, and sometimes instead of a percent, they might do a fixed dollar, and they said, I get paid monthly, I do $1,000 a month, that's $12,000, and they did that, you know, 15 years ago and never changed it. Usually you get to review this at open enrollment, and I can't emphasize enough how much you should review your open enrollment options, so you can review usually your healthcare benefits, your retirement benefits, your long-term disability or short-term disability benefits, flexible spending accounts. So please pay attention to open enrollment periods. That comes up usually, typically, you know, October, November, depending on companies' fiscal years. All right, so we've talked about 401ks, 403bs. Most 457 plans have that $20,500 plus, if you're 50 or over, an extra $6,500. Traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs, that is, there's certain requirements to be able to fund those. Those they didn't change. The amount that you can put into those remain unchanged, and that is $6,000. So you might be working and have a 401k plan and be participating in that 401k plan, or, you know, whether it's the pre-tax portion or the Roth portion, and you still might qualify to do a Roth or a traditional. Now, the Roth IRA, if you're married, filing joint, and making less than $198,000, whether or not you have a 401k at work, you can put $6,000 into your Roth IRA. And if you're over 50, you could do $7,000. If you're single, it's under $125,000. And then, of course, there's phase-out ranges. Now, the traditional IRA is a much leaner kind of threshold for people, meaning if you're already working, already have a 401k available to you, the traditional IRA is the one you could get a deduction for on your tax return. It's like $105,000 for married, filing joint, or less, because, you know, you could put money into the 401k. Do you need it? So the numbers are much smaller there. Where that becomes important is if you have a non-working spouse, because then the income limits are higher, and maybe you need the deduction. And if you're within the income range for that, if you have a non-working spouse and the working spouse is a participant in a plan, you might be able to get an extra deduction by putting money in an IRA for your non-working spouse. And how does that work? It's because the IRS says, hey, if you have a non-working spouse, we're going to let your non-working spouse count your earnings toward their ability to make that contribution. All right, because you have to have earnings to contribute to retirement plans. So it's all kind of a coordinated effort here, and particular to each person's situation. So just be aware of that as well. Just because I tell one person they can do it doesn't mean you can do it. You've got to understand your numbers and what benefits you currently have, and are available to you. Folks, this hour has gone almost, it's almost an hour, I have 15 minutes left, has gone very, very fast, much faster than I thought it would be. But if you have questions, we do still have some time, 610-758-8810. You could also email questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 FM, also available at WDIY.org, where you can stream with us or on the WDIY app. We are talking about tax changes for 2022 and some proposed changes. I've highlighted just a couple of those. There were more that I was going to cover. Let's see what kind of punch list I can have here. Again, phone number 610-758-8810. The 1099-K, this is something that might be a surprise to people, so let me mention this. Reporting for income paid by third-party payment networks to individuals if those payments exceed $600 for goods and services. And so this is kind of like the eBay, I think, reporting, or PayPal. If you're making money on some of these third-party payment networks, if you are paid more than $600, there is going to be a reporting requirement from them to you. It's on 1099-K. And basically, I think that's going to be like a flag to the IRS that you better be reporting that income if you're making income. Now, it doesn't mean that it's all going to be taxable because you might have expenses. So if eBay pays you $1,200 for, you know, sales that you've made on their site, they don't know that you actually paid, you know, $2,000 for that thing you just sold for, you know, $1,500 or something like that. So you could have expenses related to the income. So you want to make sure. You might be thinking you're just doing something for fun, and then all of a sudden you get a tax document and you're going like, what? I've never got this before. What do I do with it? Well, technically, you're supposed to report the income on your tax return that you've received. And it could be like a business income. Are you doing it to make a profit? And if you are, then it's a business and it's a Schedule C. And, you know, you might have that even if you're working. Okay, so just be aware of that. Let's see what else. The federal estate tax exemption has changed. The federal estate and gift exemption, it's a lifetime exemption. It went from $11,700,000 to $12,060,000. And so typically most people aren't subject to that, but occasionally people might not be aware of, you know, what kind of assets they have and accidentally gift something to their child and it's $10 million. And you would have to file a gift tax return to report that you're using part of your lifetime exemption. The annual exemption, where people don't have to report a gift and no one has to pay taxes or anything like that, $16,000. $16,000 or less to any individual, you don't have to report that as a gift. If it's more than $16,000, the IRS tells us we have to file a federal gift tax return, Federal Form 709, to report how much of our lifetime exemption are we using today. So if I made a gift to my child of $20,000 and the annual exemption $16,000, I've used $4,000 of my $12,060,000. And we keep track of this by filing a Form 709. And we would file that basically every year to kind of track how much of our exemption we're using, such that when we die, if I, during my life, I gave away $10 million and I die when the exemption is $12,060,000, well, I'm still under the exemption if my estate's only $2 million. But if my estate is $12 million and I've already used $10 million, you know, it's sorry, that wasn't a good example. If I had an estate worth $14 million and I gave away $10 million during my life, that means I've already used $10 million of my $12,060,000 exemption. So I'm going to have some estate tax exposure. So big numbers, not relevant to most of us. So just pointing that out. Be careful before you start doing gifting. Talk to an attorney and make sure you're doing everything the right way. The mileage rate increased for the second half of the year to 62.5 cents. That's important for people who are self-employed or have rental properties where they're, you know, running around a lot, keeping track of their mileage, because that could be a deduction for you. We've already talked about inflation adjustments on some of these things. Some other proposed changes, you know, they from Deloitte put out Tax News and Views Capitol Hill briefing from July 29th of 2022, because Schumer and Manchin have a reconciliation bill which includes corporate minimum tax, carried interest changes, and green energy incentives. A lot of this is probably more complicated and above what most of us can comprehend, but they are trying to come up with an agreement that includes revenue raising provisions that would also provide for some other inflation kind of protections for some people as far as tax savings and or health care costs. So they're proposing a corporate minimum tax with the Inflation Reduction Act. It does not propose to increase the top corporate income tax rate, but it does impose a 15% minimum tax on adjusted financial statement income for corporations with profits in excess of $1 billion. So there might be a little bit of an income tax for those folks. So take this all with a grain of salt when you hear people talking about all of these proposals and how bad it might be or not be for people. That it's not across the board. There are, you know, other provisions in there. This is one that most people don't understand. It's called the Inflation Reduction Act proposes several changes to the carried interest rules, most notably by requiring generally that net capital gain attributable and to an applicable partnership interest be held for more than 5 years to qualify for long-term capital gain treatment. Basically, what this is referencing is there were certain transactions that people who were involved in them might have been able to treat income they received for work they have done or their participation in some work. They would get a tax-favored treatment on it, long-term capital gain treatment. And so what they're proposing is to change the rules on that. It's called carried interest rules, that they require the interest to be held for more than 5 years versus what I think had traditionally been a 3-year holding period. So there are certain people who are getting tax advantaged income by work they've done when getting long-term capital gains rates instead of ordinary income tax rates, when the rest of us might be working and getting a wage, W-2 income, that's subject to ordinary income tax rates. So they're trying to tighten that a little bit. But it doesn't sound to me from this quick read that they're trying to eliminate it for those people. So I'm not sure they would be up in arms about it, because they're not eliminating it. They're just trying to change the holding period on it a little bit. They're also trying to boost IRS funding to improve taxpayer compliance. And the bill would provide the Internal Revenue Service approximately $80 billion in additional appropriations. It is to go across a number of things to help with taxpayer services for filing and education, for tax enforcement activities, for operations support, and for business systems modernization. And I think that is the biggest one where they probably need the most help. They have indicated that the proposal expressly states that the additional funds are not intended to increase taxes on any taxpayer with taxable income below $400,000. So again, when we hear about proposed tax changes and everyone gets scared, they're raising taxes. Well, not necessarily for taxpayers with taxable income below $400,000, which is probably the majority of people. They also have some clean energy tax incentives. They have they want to reduce consumer energy costs by allowing credits, $4,000 credit, to make it more affordable for certain lower and middle income individuals to purchase used clean energy vehicles. And a credit up to $7,500 be available for the purchase of new clean energy vehicles. But Senator Manchin had contended that similar incentives in earlier iterations of the bill were focused on more expensive vehicles, so they felt like it was appealing to affluent taxpayers and trying to make it more equitable. So they're trying to put it in something for used clean energy vehicles. Now, I wouldn't think that too many of those are on the market at this point yet, because we haven't even seen enough clean energy vehicles on the market new. Let's see what else. Then some other provisions for the production tax credits to accelerate U.S. manufacturing of solar panels. So different things. We don't know where it's going to go. Again, normally I don't talk too much about proposed legislation, because if it never goes through, then we've, you know, wasted brain power. Let me mention a couple other things. This is from Horse's Mouth. The new, and you know, I know some of this, but it's nice to have an article to reference as well. New IRS view on 10-year rule for IRA beneficiaries. What we have learned when they changed with the SECURE Act of 2019, what it used to be is if a non-spouse beneficiary of an IRA took money out of an IRA, they had a life expectancy table they could follow, and they could take out the required minimum distribution over their life expectancy. Then the SECURE Act of 2019 changed that, I believe, in the hopes of accelerating the taxation of retirement accounts and therefore revenue generation for taxes on retirement accounts. And they made it for non-spouse beneficiaries, other than what I'll call designated beneficiaries. So certain people are carved out from this. So just, you know, just go with me. Generally, non-spouse beneficiaries would have to now take out a beneficiary IRA within 10 years. Again, there's some designated beneficiaries that carved out from that. And what we understood is that you could take it out any time over the 10 years. So, for example, if I have a client who's 62 and he's still working and he just inherited mom's IRA, and if he had to take it out within, you know, one-tenth a year, if she had a $100,000 IRA and she had to take out $10,000, or and he had to take out $10,000 this year, if he's working and he's in his highest earning years, he would have a higher income tax on that. Whereas if they give us a little flexibility with what we thought was the 10-year rule, we could take it out at any time, I would say, hey, client, wait until you retire when you have no other income on your tax return. Take out mom's inherited IRA in year four, when you're not working anymore. Well, then there was like some confusion. The IRS was saying, no, we didn't mean for you to be able to take it out at any time in 10 years. We're saying you have to take it out every year. Then the whole accounting community was in an uproar and saying, wait, that's not what we talked about. We could take it out any time within 10 years. It gives us some flexibility with doing some planning. And now, then they said, okay, yes, anytime in 10 years. And now they're coming back and saying it might be back to this evenly throughout 10 years. Oh, it's just crazy. So we don't know where it's going. It's very hard to plan. You know, we have one set of rules. We do a lot of planning for people and think it's going one way, and then they change. And sometimes the proposed changes sometimes are retroactive. Sometimes they don't start until January 1 of the next year. It's just hard to plan. I just want them to be consistent and, you know, sit in the planner's chairs and sit in the taxpayer's chairs to kind of understand how this all works and the havoc that it sometimes wreaks. But reaps, but we will, you know, do the best we can. So that's kind of just some highlights. I hope that was helpful. I really appreciate Ed and John calling in tonight with their questions. Questions can always be submitted through the website at Your Financial Choices. I also want to thank Siri for stepping in here tonight with the phones and Marcelo for the board. I really appreciate it. It's great having you guys. You did an awesome job tonight. Next week, we are going to talk about Social Security. I'm going to just give you some updates on that. What do you have to think about? What do you want to look at for Social Security? It's called Navigating Social Security Options. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.